We are going to take the bills out of order from what is posted. We're going to go to 572 and 804 jointly. I'll open up a public hearing jointly for those, and then we will move to Senate Bill 926 and then finish up with Senate Bill 149. And with that, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bills 572 and 804. And while Senator Deckert is coming up to the table, Sue, if you want to fill us in.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 572 prohibits hunting, wounding, or taking, or attempting to hunt, wound, or take an exotic mammal or game mammal held or obtained by a person. There is an amendment to this measure. The amendment revises the measure to make it consistent with existing rules that prohibit the hunting of confined exotic animals. And Senate Bill 804 grants the State Fish and Wildlife Commission authority to define wild birds and wild mammals by rule for purposes of wildlife laws. And for your information, it reinstates the ability to regulate wildlife prior to a recent Supreme Court decision. And for the record, Kelly and Karen Smith of Bend, Oregon, submitted a letter in support of Senate Bill 572-1.
Senator, I know you've been working on this for years in the legislature, and we are very pleased to have it and you before the committee today.
Thank you. And we're not talking about renewable portfolio standards.
Well, since you bring it up, we may want. since you bring it up, and your bill will go to a vote or not today, maybe it's a good time for us to talk.
That was not my intent. I was trying to make a light judge. I know that's been an issue that's occupied.
No, we are very glad you're here on 572. You go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ryan Deckert, State Senator from the other half of Washington County, or part of Washington County, as the chair, also as probably the other half of Washington County, or Eastern Washington County. Mr. Chair, I can be very brief on this bill. It's something that the issue was brought to my attention way back before 2000, and it really is a very simple bill that has been a problem that we've been trying to get rid of for the state of Oregon, and these are these can hunt facilities that you will find hunters and editorial boards and almost unanimous opinion that this is just really not Oregon at its finest. There is one facility that's still in business to this day, and it really is something that with Senate Bill 572, I think we can finally put an end to what really is a barbaric activity, and that is shooting an animal that is fenced in, importing exotic animals into the state of Oregon, and we would join many states, and I think there's been at least some federal activity on this that would just simply lance this one boil that we have here in Oregon, and your vice chair is looking quizzically at me. And with that, so we've been at it since 1999. I know the Fish and Wildlife Commission has been very active on this issue, trying to get at the one facility that we know of, but it's one that I think finally we just have to put in state statute and finally deal with this issue, and I thank you for taking this issue up.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Peterson?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Avakian and committee members. My name is Kelly Peterson, and I'm the Oregon Program Director for the Humane Society of the United States. And I'm here today representing our more than 130,000 Oregon members and constituents. And we're in support of, obviously, Senate Bill 572 and the Dash 1 Amendment in particular. And this is an issue way back in 1997. It was how I got involved in the political process. I didn't even know you could come down and testify. And so we're right back here again on the issue. But, you know, after nearly, as Senator Decker alluded to, after nearly a two-year review by the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, they unanimously adopted an administrative rule that which attempted to ban canned hunts of exotic and game mammals. And that was in April of 1999. The commission approved this regulation after ongoing discussions with hunting representatives, private citizens, the Oregon State Police, and after listening to over 8 hours of testimony at three commission meetings. And in your packet, you'll also see the editorial boards even weighed in on the issue. And I've included the rulemaking kind of a couple documents from the rulemaking proceedings in 1999. Fortunately, just because of legal wrangling and because of some of the exemptions in the existing regulation, Oregon still doesn't have really a practical on-the-ground canned hunt law. In 1999, we were about the 13th state to ban supposedly canned hunts. Now we're about, there's probably 20 states that have already banned it, and still Oregon, we just haven't been able to do that. I won't go into some of the legal issues. I imagine Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife will. But the Senate Bill 572-1 would really just outlaw canned hunting of all game and exotic mammals, giving the commission's original regulation the full force of the law. You know, it just doesn't make sense to protect only certain trophy animals and not other ones. And that's what kind of we're facing today with the one known canned hunt operator. I will say in 1999, once the bill, or once the administrative rule was passed, Clover Creek Ranch, which is the one canned hunt operator, they were charged with 51 wildlife violations, and they were all thrown out. And so that's really why we're here today. In your attachments, you can see the original administrative rule compared to the language before you today, and that's kind of at the back. We worked with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to address any of their concerns, and those are reflected in the Dash 1 amendments. And we also worked with Legislative Council, which the language is reflected in the bill, just to make it more consistent with wildlife laws and the definitions versus what was an administrative rule. The exemptions are nearly identical to those in the administrative rule, except we did tighten up the language under subsection 2A, and that just protects so that canned hunt operators can't circumvent the intent of the bill by claiming that the animals are killed for meat, when in fact the primary purpose of these animals being shot in a fenced in enclosure at close range is for trophy purposes. I just also want to address the damage statute, the 498.012. That already provides authority for a person to take wildlife that's damaging any property. And that provision overrides anything else in the game code, including this bill. So, you know, this does not impact someone's authority to take or trap nuisance animals like nutria, because that will just continue to exist if the bill's passed. So the goal with this bill is really just to address those exotic and game mammals that are privately held or obtained, and closing the loophole that we believe is giving one person a monopoly on canned hunts in Oregon. And it's an issue that we thought was addressed in 1999, but it wasn't. And with that, I just really thank you for the opportunity to testify and support the bill.
Committee?
Senator Byron.
Thank you. Senator Deckert, how are you?
I'm good.
You ever been to see the boil, as you described it?
No, I'm Mr. Chair, Senator Byard, I have not been to the ranch. I've passed one in the state of Texas that is similar, and I've seen pictures of it, and certainly talked to our wildlife law enforcement officials who tried to and have been on the grounds of the ranch many times and tried to, what they thought was going to be a successful attempt to close it. So I feel like I have a decent idea of the ranch.
Well, from my perspective, I've never been to his ranch either. I've never hunted on it, but I own a similar-sized piece of property not too far from his place. He's got about just over 2,000 acres that's fenced, and we have just over 2,000 acres that's fenced. And, you know, you could turn loose, a couple hundred Russian boar in there, and you might never see them again. I don't consider that a canned hunt. A canned hunt is where an animal has no opportunity to escape. And to me, there is a huge difference. And I'm a hunter. And I can't support this bill because this bill's attempting to put him out of business. And I just wonder if you've ever been over and actually saw what it was what's going on. You should take a look.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Byron, I'm now quickly doing the history, and I know that you and I will not agree on this issue, remembering back 6 or 7 years ago. But to me, the many states that have actually outlawed this, and the hunting groups that I think will testify today, I'm not sure, but the hunting groups that I believe, at least in the past, have testified on this, is that this one form of hunting, and I certainly just as one citizen in the state of Oregon and one state senator really believe that this is not, and I think hopefully the hunting groups will attest to this, it really is not hunting in its finest form, and I certainly believe that fencing in exotic animals that have been imported to the state, to me, is just not, doesn't meet that sportsman test that other, certainly, fabric of our society hunting activities do, and at least the many folks that I've talked to seem to attest that we ought to join, and we thought we did. We thought the Fish and Wildlife Commission really did have that authority, and that's why the statute's here before you, is because I believe you'll hear from them that they would need some statutory guidance, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Senator, I want
to ask a question.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
You know, I'm in a position, too, of owning property with elk and deer running all over it and through it sometimes as far as fencing was concerned. And up the road from me was a gentleman who was trying to preserve an exotic species, not for hunting, but because it was endangered. And surprisingly, it was done in southern Oregon. We have several exotic species that are endangered that are being maintained there because they're from Asia and there's a concern about them. When I fenced my property, it was for keeping my cattle and horses in line as much as I could. And the deer and the antelope did roam, and they were free to move across my property, my next property, and back and forth. I assume the kind of fencing we're talking about here, though, and I want to make sure my assumption is correct, is the type of fencing that my friend up the road had for his endangered species. And there were some kind of a antelope from East Africa, but they were 8, 10, 12 foot high fences, and they were designed to keep those animals on that property, other animals out, and so the animals really were confined to that particular property, not the kind of fencing that I have where they could move back and forth. I'm assuming that's correct, is that?
Yeah, Chair Vaughan and Senator Bates, it is the definition, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife wrestled with this issue back in 1999, and it really, the distinguishing is that those game mammals and exotic mammals that are held are obtained. So it's not those any animals that just are kind of wandering through the property where you have a fenced in enclosure. Okay. So, but can I just add one thing about, I know for Senator Byers' question about those animals that are in even a larger enclosure that maybe would be different than what you'd classify as a canned hunt. Is that okay to?
Go ahead and do
okay,
it.
Okay.
Go ahead and do it briefly.
Okay, I just want to
at your own peril.
Chair Vaughan and Senator Byer, for me, with canned hunts, these animals are bred in captivity, and their food source is manipulated, and guides know the areas where these animals can be found, and so that's for me what distinguishes it, just the fact that they're human fed, and there's really no fear of humans, so. I just wanted to add that.
Just one question.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Chair Walking. Senator Byer, no, I have not.
Thank you.
Senator Decker, before you leave the table, I did just want to make sure that the record is clarified as much as it might need to be. I don't see anything in the bill that implies that you were intending to put any particular person out of business. Whether or not that's the result or not, I guess we have to see. But it looks to me like your intent is really just to craft some type of a statewide policy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for adding that to the record. That is the intent here, is that this is good state law. We ought to have it on the books. And if it affects one or more, and that would be like any other law that we consider. But you are correct. When drafting this, we really wanted to put the right statutes on the book and appreciate your hearing this bill and considering it.
And the only other comment that I would add for the record is that, just like with a lot of issues, hunters can, you know, disagree as to, you know, what the definition of sportsmanlike is or what the culture of hunting should or should not be. And personally, as somebody who has spent his time in the field hunting, as I was growing up especially, I'm very pleased to see the bill and think that it not only creates a good statewide policy, but also helps preserve the culture in Oregon of fair sportsmanship on the hunt. So thank you for bringing the bill from that perspective as well. Mr. Elker, I did not see you signed up to testify. I'm assuming you wanted to. Okay, why don't we bring you up next then? Senator, thank you.
Chair Bakken, and I apologize for that oversight. Before I could sign Ron and I up for both bills,
yeah.
We were just a few seconds too late. And Senate Bill 572, Senator, I think we have a very brief statement to make. As you are aware, we
name for the record, and then you can launch into that one, and then 804 after that, if you don't mind.
Sure. Roy Alliker with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Deputy Director for Fish and Wildlife Programs. And regarding Senate Bill 572, Senator, members of the committee, we have worked closely with the Humane Society on this bill. We want to be sure there's no unintended consequences of the bill, and that's why we would ask that if the committee does move this bill, we would ask that the dash one amendment be part of that bill at that point. Thanks, sir.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. I have nothing further to add.
Committee, let's take any questions before Mr. Alliker says anything about 804.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking for the language that defines the offense. Is that on the dash one amendments or something?
I'm sorry, that defines what?
What offense is. We had testimony that these canned hunts are a place that have a fence where mammals cannot get out of. Where's the fence? In the, I don't see the dash ones. Thanks. Is that in here somewhere?
I don't see the word fence. Mr. Alliker, would you like to comment at all on the parameters of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The bill, Senator Atkinson, the word fence does not appear in the bill because the way the bill describes pretty much in terms of taking and the way that the exotic mammal or game mammal is held or obtained by that person or another person. So essentially the bill does codify what our Fish and Wildlife Commission has adopted by rule with one exception. It does have a little larger definition on how it defines exotic mammals, and I'd let Mr. Anglin get into that in detail if that's needed, Chair Vakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Exotic mammals, how the Commission has defined that in the past, actually there's two questions I think they're in front of us. One is the definition of fence, and the Commission, when they adopted canned hunt rules back in the late 90s, did not make any definition of fence, how facilities should look like, or anything like that. That was left up to the landowner, and this bill does not address fencing in any way at all. The second question that came up that Mr. Alliker mentioned was the definition of exotic mammals, which is a little broader than what the Commission had adopted in canned rule or in their canned hunt rules before, in that there are several species that are exempt that this bill would not exempt.
So do you have codified the word exotic?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer?
I think the operative word is held, and that the animal is held or obtained by another person, and that it's under that the definition of the word held is where the fence is how you get to a fenced animal, and I don't know if the commission has defined by rule what the word, you know, how they define the word held, but that is the operative word on this my reading of it anyway.
Well, just for argument's sake, what's the difference in this and going to some place that has grown pheasants and chuckers? Certainly held them.
Chair Vakian.
Grew them. They withheld their diet or, in some case, fattened them up.
Chair Vakian, Senator Atkinson, the difference is that this law and our rules apply only to mammals. So birds are not included. So this doesn't have any impact whatsoever on pheasant hunting reserves and those other places that we regulate to allow birds to be raised and used for hunting purposes.
So they're not as valuable as mammals.
Chair Vakian, Senator Atkinson, I can't address that one. But
maybe we should wait until 804.
right, thanks.
Chair.
Thank you, Senator. I think
Senator Beyer.
And I neglect. I should have asked Senator Deckert this question, and he's gone. Maybe Ms. Peterson would like to come back up. But I'll ask Roy and Ron, I guess. Does the department still have the Starkey Experimental Forest?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, yes, sir, we do.
So that would be shut down by this law also.
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, no, it would not. There is still an exemption for facilities like that as directed by the director.
But, Mr. Chair, I don't know how many acres are in the Starkey Experimental Forest. It's a lot. It's what, 5,000 acres, something like that. But if a 5,000 acre enclosure is okay to be hunted in, why is a 2,000 acre enclosure not okay to be hunted in?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, that was a hotly debated question during the original canned hunt rulemaking that the commission undertook in 1999. And the commission looked at having, for scientific type purposes, having some ability for the director to waive the canned hunt rules to address those types of things, and recognizing that it was a research facility and was being used as such. And it is not specifically prohibited within this rule, because if you look at Section 3, it does still give the director the authority to waive some facilities like that.
Committee, anything further? Why don't you give us your testimony on 804 very briefly, and then you can leave the table.
Senator Deckert was still here. I'm sorry, Ryan, I didn't see you.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Vaki, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Roy Elker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I want to be sure we have some prepared testimony on this bill as well that hopefully is in front of the committee at this point. 804 is a bill, Mr. Chair, that would bring back to the commission authority it believed it had it for many decades regarding the regulation of wildlife in the state. Up until just last year or so, the commission and, frankly, the state of Oregon believed it had the authority under current law to regulate wildlife, no matter if it was wildlife in this state or another state that was brought into the state, even for what might be called domesticated purposes. With a case that came out of the Supreme Court last year, the court ruled that the literal Webster's Dictionary definition of wild would have to be applied to the term wild mammal and wild bird. So at that point, we've had to really reassess what that court case did to the commission's authority, and it would cause quite a high impact on a number of important things, particularly invasive species. It would regulate hunting of wildlife held within fences, and I'm taking a look at bottom of page one of our testimony. It would nullify the specific minimum caging requirements we currently have for bear and cougar right now that are held by private individuals or organizations. We have quite a lengthy set of rules right now regarding what's called invasive species of all kinds and sizes. It would have impacts on those rules that have been adopted through a very public process, through the commission process and rules, probably negate our regulations on currently hunting with falcons and other birds of prey, as well as the sale of wildlife and wildlife parts. So based on those impacts of the court's interpretation of wildlife law, we would ask that this bill go forward and replace the commission's authority as to the regulation of wildlife in this state, whether or not it was in a free and untamed state or not.
Committee, questions? Isn't it about birds, Senator Atkinson?
Doesn't hurt my ability to tie flies, does it?
That's assuming you have an ability.
Senator Bates.
I just want to make the chair know that while I'm the lone sponsor of this, I did so at the request of the Wildlife Society, and I thank them for giving me the opportunity to do that. This is not my take-home, so let's not get too excited here.
Senator Vaki, members of the committee, the department does appreciate the opportunity to testify on both bills. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
And just for the record, I asked Roy and Ron earlier this question, and as to when does wildlife become wildlife? I know you don't have an answer. I don't know if it'll help to clarify for the record, but for instance, the opossum and the nutria in this state are both introduced. They are now wildlife. With this bill, at what point in time will a species like that go from being whatever they are to wildlife?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, as we discussed earlier, the complexities or what happens that as they're being held in private possession and then they escape and get turned loose into the wild, they simply become an animal that has escaped from somebody and is somebody's property. And under our old definition of wildlife and how we applied that through the commission's authority, even though they'd escaped from someplace because they were wild in another state, we classified them as wildlife in Oregon and exercised regulatory authority over those animals in dealing with problems.
So under this bill, you'd be able to regulate them as wildlife before they escape and become wild.
Senator Vaki and Chair Beyer, or Chair Beyer, Senator of, I'll get it right.
Chair Beyer.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah, you better get that one right.
Yeah, I better get that one right. Apologize. Once under the new order, if you will, we no longer have authority to regulate them if they are brought in as domesticated animals. And even if they escape, we no longer have the authority to regulate them. They would just simply be an escaped animal that we have no authority to regulate.
Well, I guess one last one, I forgot, I didn't think about it until now. Feral pigs, where do they fall into?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, feral pigs, there was a statute, I think, just last session on those that very specifically gave authority on those to us in the Department of Ag. So they're specifically covered in law.
With or without this?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much. Beverly and Theodore Paul.
Ladies before and gentlemen, how does this work?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Paul, go right ahead whenever you're ready.
Can I go ahead?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. I'm not going to address the pros and cons.
Just go ahead and say your name for the record
We
have that recorded.
Beverly Ann Paul. And do you want the address?
No, you can go right ahead.
Okay. I'm not going to address the pros and cons of the Senate bill. You're all familiar with it. I'm going to take it from a little bit different approach. What I have to say is very simple. Great men over the ages have seen and known the need for kindness and the fair treatment to animals. A few among them are Abraham Lincoln, Albert Schweitzer, who said, "Anyone who has accustomed himself to regard the life of any living creature as worthless is in danger of arriving also at the idea of worthless human lives." Chief Seattle and Mahatma Gandhi, who I quote, "The greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated." No one is asking that hunting be abated, but I am sure that Chief Seattle, who certainly believed in hunting, would turn over in his grave if he knew of canned hunts. When our National Congress is taking giant steps to protect animals, it only makes sense that Oregon should follow suit. And I will close with a quote from Tony La Russa, the manager of the 2006 World Series champions, the St. Louis Cardinals. And believe me, I was cheering for him. The work always begins, as it did on that ball field in 1990, with that special moment when an animal and a person connect and respond to the needs of each other. Thank you.
Wow, she's good, isn't she?
I don't know what you could possibly add to that, but take your best shot.
My name is Ted Paul, and we live in South Salem. Senator Cameron is the gentleman who runs our district, and we are pleased to be here, Mr. Chairman, and the rest of the committee. I am an ex-hunter. I say ex-hunter because I was trained as a young man, which I no longer am, by my father back in Ohio to hunt rabbits and pheasants. With 6 mouths to feed in the house, my dad taught me well. He taught me to respect the wildlife I was hunting. He taught me to respect the land on which we hunted. And we took only the game we could eat. I have long since developed a feeling that now requires I can no longer harm an animal, whether it's my life to eat or not. And when I hear about this bill and the canned hunts, I think the committee needs to focus in on the word canned, because that says it all. These animals are entrapped in small quarters. I'm sure Senator Byers would remember the term shooting fish in a barrel. This is akin to what is happening on these canned hunt farms. These animals are raised by humans to like humans, to trust humans, and they walk to the fence only to be literally blown apart by a coward, not a hunter, standing there blasting them through an open fence. I think that this state of ours, Oregon, is full of good, honest, legitimate sportsman hunters. And frankly, folks, I think they're getting a bad rap from this few that call themselves hunters when they're really cowards looking to get a cheap, uneventful trophy to hang on their basement wall. It is not fair, and I'm a hunter, to stand here and tell you this. Gentlemen, I strongly urge you to pass this Senate Bill 572 with its dash one, because it closes the loopholes on the previous bill and puts Oregon back on the map again as the kind of state we want it to be. Thank you very much. Questions?
Seeing nothing from the committee, appreciate you both being here very much. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Susan Mentley and Dr. Peets.
Good afternoon, Chair Avakian and members of the committee. I'm Susan Mentley. I'm from the Oregon Humane Society, and I am appreciating the opportunity to speak with you today and having the opportunity to drive down I-5 on a very beautiful day to support Senate Bill 572. In hearing the previous testimony, I don't feel that I need to expound on any particular facts. For the sake of brevity, I just want to go down and say the Oregon Humane Society has testified on such bills before. We were there in 1999, and I'm hoping that today's committee hearing will result in your sincere consideration for passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Peets?
Thank you, Chairman and Senators. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you in support of Senate Bill 572. I'm a veterinarian and a native Oregonian. I grew up in Ty Valley, Maupin area, and hunted. And I, too, like Mr. Paul, I'm an ex-hunter, but I grew up learning many things through my participation in hunting. My family still owns a considerable amount of property, and hunting is a very active thing that takes place on that property in that area. But let's not kid ourselves. We're not talking about hunting here. We're talking about, as, again, Mr. Fall said, we're talking about shooting animals that are confined in a given area and have no chance for escape. That is not sportsmanship, and it's not hunting. And so I was, when Kelly called me yesterday and asked if I would testify, I was amazed because I thought we put this thing to rest years ago, and to find out that it's still going on in the state of Oregon, a state that I am proud to be a citizen of and lived here my whole life, I was amazed that we still have a loophole that allows this inhumane practice to take place in Oregon. And I would strongly urge you to put an end to this practice. It's not hunting. It's shooting fish in a barrel, if you will. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you both. Committee, any questions? Seeing none? Very good, then. Thank you. I'm going to shift over to 804. We have two folks left to testify on these bills. And regarding 804, Warren Aney and Stephen Kafori. Welcome, Mr. Aney.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, my name is Warren Aney. Stephen is trying to cover two hearings at once, so if he gets back in here, we'll let him pitch in, too. I am here as a volunteer member of the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. I'd like to start out with a quick, well, to tell you a little bit about who we are. We're an international professional organization, and the Oregon chapter of this professional organization is represents professional field and research biologists, educators, students, administrators, law enforcement officers, a wide variety of people involved in the profession of wildlife management here in the state of Oregon. Our goal normally is to promote science and education and make sure they get properly used in the public decision-making process. Quick summary of the situation that we're in. The recent Supreme Court decision narrowed the definition of wildlife and took away much of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife's historic authority to regulate certain species of mammals and birds. You've already heard some of this, but I'd like to emphasize that. This change potentially exposes native species to a number of risks, including risks from disease introduction, genetic contamination, habitat loss, competition, and predation. A little background. Normally, we don't get involved in advocating. We want to make sure good science gets used in the decision-making process, and you may hear us sometimes trying to do that through the legislative process. But in this particular case, we became aware of a problem that resulting from the Supreme Court decision that needed action. So we do sponsor this particular action in order to rectify a change from the historic authority of the department and commission to manage an important segment of our wildlife. The narrowing of this definition, and again, I don't want to be too repetitive, but I want to make sure that it's understood that the narrowing of the definition extends to those birds and mammals that are not considered to be living in a wild and untamed state. Prior to this court ruling, the commission and the department had jurisdiction over all species of wildlife, including wild mammals and wild birds, regardless of the condition under which they existed. And the court narrowed this definition, in effect removing the authority of the department and the commission to regulate a number of very significant species. This loss of authority potentially includes many ungulate species, hoofed animal species, many carnivore species, and rodent species, certain bird species from throughout the world, and many of these species are currently held in various forms of captivity in the United States. So it's a real present a risk that we want to address. So how big a problem is this? There are a number of biological problems and risks relating to the holding or confinement of wild animals. These include, in the case of a game-proof fenced enclosure, if it's many acres, you're excluding native wildlife from maybe an important part of their winter range, maybe a migration corridor that they need to get from one part of their range to another. There are problems with disease transmission among native and both native wildlife, between native wildlife and these non-indigenous species. For example, we have a situation right now in Central Oregon where we have escaped Mufulan and Aodad sheep, a form of wild sheep, and we cannot introduce bighorn sheep into that area because the potential is that these escaped wild species would be a reservoir for a Pasteurella bacteria that is fatal to bighorn sheep. Wild boar has been mentioned. They may transmit a number of diseases, such as swine brucellosis, pseudorabies virus, and trichinosis. There are problems due to genetic interchange. If you get a closely related animal escaping into the wild, this species could interbreed with the closely related animals in the wild. For example, red deer can interbreed with elk. Well, cervids aren't particularly, cervids are already accepted, so that's not a problem. But there are, could also be a problem with certain members of the cat, dog, and weasel families. There's problems of potential habitat overuse. If you fence animals in and you want to raise a lot of animals, you're going to get into problems with habitat overuse as a potential, and this could not could end up excluding or reducing the habitat value for native animals. An example might be sage grouse in southeast Oregon. Okay, you've got a 2,000-acre enclosure that includes sage grouse habitat. You're raising some kind of ungulate on this, but the ungulate would be putting pressure on the range and possibly devaluing that range for the sage grouse. And then there's the potential of introducing exotic species that are invasive. And we've seen that with the nutrient, we've seen it with some others. There are a number of other problems. They're in the written testimony. I would like to point out that there is, and it's been a brief mention of it, a wildlife integrity program under the Department of Fish and Wildlife that has been weakened very much by this recent court decision. This wildlife integrity program classifies non-native species into four categories: prohibited, controlled, non-controlled, domestic, and unclassified. There's about there's a large group of animals that are birds and animals that are classified as controlled, and these cannot be imported or possessed by other than accredited institutions. There are a number of controlled birds. A person can hold these controlled birds under specific regulations that apply to that particular species of bird. There's no, for non-controlled, there's no restrictions. And then if there's a species that has not been put on this list, it's unclassified, they cannot be brought in until the commission goes through a process of defining what the classification should be for that species. So the recommended solution, Senate Bill 804, would allow the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to define by rule which species are considered wild animals, wild mammals, or wild birds. And I think this would restore the historical authority of the department to go through, to use its expertise of its staff and go through a public decision-making process. In conclusion, I'd like to emphasize that Senate Bill 804 reinstates the full historic authority and responsibility of Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to manage and regulate all of Oregon's wildlife heritage. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffori. I'm sorry I wasn't here. I had another bill I'm carrying in another committee. I'm representing the Wildlife Society today, Oregon chapter. And first of all, I wanted to thank Senator Bates for the courtesy in introducing the bill. I know that this wasn't something that he's particularly interested in, but
I didn't say that. I said it wasn't my priority.
Not his primary concern, shall I say?
A little health care, probably a little health care bill working on. You know.
And I do also want to let the committee know that the bill should have had an emergency clause on it, but in the interest of time, we're going to put an emergency clause on over in the House and not in this committee.
Very good. Committee, any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you both.
Thank you.
And with that, I am going to close the public hearing on Senate Bills 572 and 804. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 572. And Senator Bates, we've got the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes,
if
Mr.
you don't mind
Mr.
the
Chair,
motion.
Mr. Chair, could I move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 572?
Senator Bates moves Dash 1 amendments. Is there any discussion? And is there any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are adopted. And if I could have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate Bill 572 as amended be referred to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Bates moves Senate Bill 572 to the floor as amended with due pass recommendation. Committee, any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I won't be supporting the motion, and I think it's ironic that pass this bill, the state of Oregon will become the only authorized holder of canned hunts, because they do have one every year under the definitions of this bill. The Starkey Experimental Forest is enclosed entirely by a fence that animals cannot escape that are being hunted, and this bill will allow that to continue.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I believe that hunt does occur. I'm not an expert on it, but I believe the purpose of that hunt is not necessarily to take trophies, but to gain scientific knowledge of those animals. And the way of taking the animals allows the hunters to come in and shoot them, but it's not the purpose of the hunt. And there's a difference there.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, the motion is to put Senate Bill 570 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
Yes, I'll object.
Senator Beyer and Senator Atkinson object. The motion carries, and Senator Bates, would you carry the bill?
I would glad to, Mr. Chair. I think that Senator...
Let's have Senator Deckard carry
Deckard,
the
I think
bill.
We'd like thank to carry this Senator bill Bates. As a courtesy to him. I think we should do that.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 572, open up work session on Senate Bill 804.
Mr. Senator Chair, Bates. Would you accept a motion to move Senate Bill 804 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation?
Senator Bates moves 804 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion? And are there any objections? And seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bates, how about you carry that one?
I'd be glad to, as long as it doesn't upset Senator Deckard. That's my concern I have here. Okay.
You guys can tag team it if you want.
There we go.
With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 804, and we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 926.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 926 directs the State Parks and Recreation Department to construct velodromes in northern and southern Oregon. This measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Sue. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Jason Atkinson. I am a state senator from District 2 and one of the areas that would be affected by this bill. What this bill does is this bill push starts one of the most important communities that we have in southern Oregon, or in Oregon, which is a cycling community. And this will help push start the creation of one, and then two, and possibly a third velodrome in Oregon. It has always been my interest as a lifelong cyclist and someone interested in the sport that there can be more done as we look at the strength that Oregon already has in cycling. So what do I mean by that? Well, Southern Oregon, where Senator Bates and I live, is world-renowned as some of the finest cycling, not only on the West Coast, but in America. And over the years, some of the world's top cyclists have either called Southern Oregon home or have lived there or to train there. In fact, if you watch many of the tour riders that are riding and have ridden in the past, many of them have lived and or trained in Southern Oregon. We have a very strong community there, and it is with that idea and the love of cycling that we started to think about, and I say we because it wasn't just my idea, but what would it take to build a velodrome in which we would use parks money as a seed money and use matching dollars from the cycling community to not only raise but also manage the tracks and keep them going. Well, I started to meet, as now I am one of the old men from cycling, I started to meet with a very experienced cycling community and started kicking around the idea. Well, it was that which led to a bill, which led me to someone who's going to testify in just a moment, Mr. Steve Brown. And his enthusiasm led us to quickly create a bill that grew so fast it actually outgrew me and outgrew what I thought was a support base. Because coming to this bill, not only is the support of a bicycle racing community, but also is the cycling touring community, is also the kids community, and now we have chambers of commerce, we have visitors bureaus, we have tourism bureaus, we have lodging associations, and the list just keeps going on. For instance, in Southern Oregon, we have a very active chamber, which for years has supported bowling. And the national attention that they've received from bowling said, hey, wait a minute, cycling's actually, I don't want to offend the governor and the executive branch, but cycling's a faster-growing community. It was with that that Southern Oregon invested modestly in some parks for soccer. We became not only a regional pool, but a West Coast pool during months of the summer for soccer. So why cycling? Well, cycling, because Oregon already is one of the top states in America for cycling. We already have a national reputation. When I originally drafted the bill, I drafted it at the request of a future Oregon Olympic cyclist. That's really my goal here. I really, truly believe that it will not be too long that if we just help that we will have an Olympic cyclist from our state. I meet Steve Brown in Oregon. Steve, are you?
Yes.
Come on up. Steve's involvement, you're looking at, why don't you state your name for the record and your rank nationally?
Steve Brown, I'm ranked fourth in the nation currently in 55 to 59 age group in 500 meters.
Which means
he's fast.
He's fast. Yeah, I was gonna say he's
after very long though.
But we have in the Portland area, we have one of the tracks that has been well known for years. In fact, I believe the Alpenrose track was created by Dairyman in a week, with all of its lumps and all of its love for the 1969 National Championships.
Correct.
I believe.
Early in the 60s, yes.
And that track has been so used and so used and so used that it's actually Steve's effort to build another one, one that's certainly more modern. Here's some of the neat things about it. There's a huge economic pool. For us in Southern Oregon, not only do we have the backing of the tourists and the business community, but we also know that we could become a huge hub for international cycling events because, quite honestly, contrary to where Mr. Brown lives, it doesn't rain as much where we live. Secondly, the other thing that is so fascinating is that velodromes are a huge output for children getting involved in cycling. So people say, oh, this is just a small subgroup of grown men that wear tights and ride in circles. Actually, it's a lot more than that. Frisco, Texas has created a huge economic community surrounding their velodrome, not only for kids and youth programs, but also for the local business community. So we got to thinking about this, and I met Steve, and of course he's, and you'll hear from just a moment, his infectiousness, and the bill grew, and the bill grew, and the bill grew, and I started to receive emails from your party offices in Portland, and I will not say their name, but the Democratic Party offices, where people who are working to defeat me around the clock, sending me quiet emails saying, this is really cool. I'll never say it on the record, but this is really great. I've received emails from around the state. The coalition has built and built and built, and it is built to the point where Senator Prezansky has yet another suggestion, help for the bill, which I'll let him introduce. But it's more than cycling. It's actually a big business component. If we can build skateboard parks, we certainly can help create an Olympic athlete. So that's where I'm coming from. We've done a lot of work in the community all over Southern Oregon, Jackson, Josephine, Klamath County, Deschutes County, Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington County, And with Senator Pruszynski, I think we'll add a few more. So it's a small investment. We, as a cycling community, are willing to raise the rest of the money. We're willing, and we already manage the tracks. In fact, I think it was an email from you. Oregon right now is one of the, I think we are the best, most organized cycling racing states in the nation.
We receive regular requests to
duplicate them. Just say your name for the record so we know.
Steve
something.
Brown.
Good.
So we receive regular requests from states all across America. How can we set up an organization just like the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association? We have become the model for the creation of independent state cycle committees.
In Southern Oregon, we race once a week at a drag strip, if you can believe it or not. And one week we go one way, and the other week we go the other way, and we love it. What this would actually do, why I bring that up, and why I bring up the point about PIR and Mount Tabor and all the other classic races that we have, is that we have the built-in infrastructure to not just create a state park that now the state's got to manage. We're all ready to go. We just need a little seed money and blessing from the state. We'll raise the rest of the money, build it, and we'll manage it. And it's a win-win because this park, Velodrome Park, hopefully three of them for a minimal amount of money, has huge economic returns to the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pruszynski.
I do want to just interpret for you since the location Frisco, Texas came up, just for your information. That's a community just north of Dallas.
Thank you, Senator. You had a couple people that you wanted to have come up as a panel, so why don't I...
Do we get to ask questions for him?
Sure.
Well, Senator Atkinson, you're pretty well known in the Senate for always trying to peddle something to us.
Oh.
You know, after the fly tying comment, Mr. Senator Bates,
but this
I'm still
time,
stinging from that one.
But this time, we are in Southern Oregon grateful for you bringing us forward. We've
Thank
got
you.
A lot of families that are looking forward to taking part. This is a family activity, too. A lot of kids can do this, and I really appreciate you doing this. And I've had a lot of people from down south saying that this is something they can look forward to seeing spring up our community. It's something we all take part in. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bates. For the committee to know, Senator Bates and I and Representative Buckley, Representative Richardson, Representative Esquivel, we had a movement in Southern Oregon to finish the bike path, and we've all there's been lots of political things about bike paths, except in Southern Oregon we actually like ours, and we are working as a community and foundations and working with ODOT to go under Barnett Road. We actually all work together on this issue. Well, there was a ride that came up to support the bike path, and I think its first year would we have 1,000 or something,
like huge turnout.
We had a huge massive
turnout, unbelievable
turnout in support of this, and Senator Bates and all the other colleagues that I just listed off would not ride. And so, representing the entire legislative branch, I did. But I say that because that shows the amount of interest and passion that we have for it down there. And this is more than just people like us like to ride fast. You know, I have a son. He's 4. He has long femurs, and I've got big hopes.
Anything else for the senator? If not, if you don't mind giving up your seat, I'll call up Jonathan Mouse and Scott Bricker. And Mr. Brown, you can go ahead and get started while they're making their way up to the table.
Okay. Chairman Vakian, fellow senators, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. Please apologize. I'd like to apologize in advance if I make any procedural errors. It's the first time I've done this, so please feel free to correct me.
You have to do is say your name and launch into it.
Steve Brown. I'm the co-chair of the Portland Velodrome Committee New Track Facility. And if it pleases you, I would like to read this. Oregon is the top bike racing state in America. No other state comes close in per capita racing. OBRA, or the Oregon Bicycle Racing Association, is the national model for state bike racing associations. Riders and their families come from all over the country to be part of this vibrant scene. The Cascade Classic is the oldest continuous road race in the United States. 2 years running, we've hosted the Cyclocross National Championships. The entire country of Belgium is the only place on the planet that has more cyclocross racers than Oregon. At the pinnacle, this entire racing is the AVC held at the Alpenrose Dairy every July. This track cycling event, which brings international riders, Olympic champions, national team members, and top riders from across the country, is the single most lucrative event for professional track racers in America. In addition, Hobart promotes the only six-day race in the United States. Oregon is number one in per capita racers. Number two, Colorado, has 50% fewer racers. Oregon is number two in total race events, only eight behind the entire state of California. Our only limit is enough venues and enough days to race. Otherwise, we'd be number one. Oregon is number three in total racers, behind only California and Colorado. Senate Bill 926 will allow for the creation of two velodromes, possibly a third, one in southern Oregon, one in northern Oregon, and some other place. The goal, most likely Eugene. Oh. The goal of these programs is to make these cycle points, or Junction City, it's pretty close in between there, growing bicycle industry in the state, promote cycling tourism, build youth programs, and support Olympic cycling in the state. Athletic clothing and related equipment has become one of the largest industries in Oregon. The bicycling industry has followed this trend and has become one of the most rapidly growing in the state. The Portland Development Commission has recognized this and is working to establish a permanent industry group in the metro area. Having cycling tracks provides the industry a place to showcase products and host national and international events. Cycle Oregon has shown the great benefits of cycling tourism. The travel industry has taken notice of this growth in racing and wants to use the same model to bring more riders and visitors to the state. When national track cycling championships were held in Redmond, Washington, seven times over the past 20 years, they attracted 18,000 visitors for the five-day competition. Building updated tracks in Oregon will allow OBRA to bring national junior track cycling and masters championships once every 3 years and will allow us to bid for the elite championships in 5 years. These two age group events draw between 500 and 1,000 new visitors to each state that they're held in. Building tracks that racers want to ride and venues that are enjoyable will also greatly increase unique visitors to the state. Having a velodrome in southern Oregon can take advantage of the dry climate, and a covered facility in the north will allow for the creation of destination events. Cycling Tour organizers can create track events where cycling visitors can learn to ride and race at a velodrome as part of their cycling experience in Oregon. The goals of this bill would be to bring a national cycling championships to Oregon, increase unique visits to Oregon between 2,000 and 5,000 years within a period of 3 to 5 years, and attract national media attention to cycling in Oregon. If anybody happened to watch the Tour of California on the OLN station, it was a week-long advertisement for the state of California. They happen to have a bike race, but it was strictly a postcard for the state of California. The easiest and most successful places to have a youth cycling program is at a velodrome. Almost all velodromes in the country have realized this and have moved to develop strong youth programs. A velodrome provides a central location where kids can ride and race without having to be on the streets. It can be a year-round facility where they can meet, learn the values of an Olympic sport, and have fun in a safe environment. In a recent survey of velodrome operators, programs at tracks with up-to-date facilities and good locations can bring in over 1,000 kids in a season. Kids will flock to a nice facility they can easily get to. Leaving velodrome creation to private funding limits the sport to elite racing and special interests. Currently, any aspiring Olympic track cyclist in the state would have to leave for California and Pennsylvania. If you've ever been in Pennsylvania during the summer, you know how difficult that can be. In California, the logistics of being in Los Angeles is just a nightmare. We do not currently have a facility that would support the type of training required to make a U.S. Olympic cycling team. Building these two venues will allow us to attract top riders in the nation to live and train in Oregon. We believe the next to Lance Armstrong, an Olympic champion, should come from Oregon. This is a bill that creates a one-time funding request that will allow track cycling to flourish in the state for the next 30 years. We already have the self-funding programs. We just need the capital funding to continue. I urge you to support this bill.
Mr. Mouse?
I'm Jonathan Moss. I'm the editor of BikePortland.org, and I cover
It's an online news magazine for mostly Portland, but I do cover Oregon-wide bicycling-related issues, and have been covering this particular news since day one, since Steve approached the local community saying that he would personally start the fundraising off for this new velodrome in Portland. I just wanted to... It's hard to add anything. Steve does such a great job. I would just remind you that this bill and this effort to build these new velodromes is part of a larger movement that's happening in Oregon right now. This ongoing effort is bringing all sorts of people to the table. Senator Atkinson mentioned them, from tourism to economic development to community programming. All sorts of different people are really working hard to make Oregon the premier state for cycling in the country, and we are well on our way. There is an upcoming Oregon Bicycle Tourism Summit, and it's coming to Sisters in just a few weeks, and this is certainly going to be being discussed. We'll be creating more coalitions and more partnerships with more people. I just want to, another point I would make about why I feel this bill is important. We've talked a little bit about the economic development, but I think, you know, beyond the health of the economy, there's a big issue with obesity with children nationwide, and Oregon actually is one of the leading as far as percentage of kids that are obese, and having several facilities like this around the state could have a big impact on lessening some of that. Cycling is track cycling. It's a very affordable activity. It's very simple. Every kid knows how to do it. It's just, you know, one, maybe 2 hour session, and they'll be going around the track having fun. So I think there's a health development issue in this as well that I think is very important. And like Steve said, we've got everything going. We have the statewide support. On my website, as I've reported about this, there's been a lot of comments coming in, and one thing that I'm really excited about is that it's an opportunity for the whole state to kind of work together on this, and all the different communities to come together, and I'm really excited to hear about people in Central Oregon wanting to join up. So there's really been an outpouring of support. We've got the community support. We have the existing infrastructure and administrative support to make this happen. We have the programming support already in place. The only thing we're really missing are these facilities. So I urge you to join this movement and seize this really great opportunity to make these velodromes happen and to establish Oregon as the best biking state in the country. Thank you.
Mr. Bricker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Bricker, and I'm the policy director for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. The Bicycle Transportation Alliance is a statewide organization, and we work to make Oregon a bicycle-friendly place. We've been doing so for 15 years, and Oregon truly is one of the most bicycle-friendly places in the world, definitely within our nation. We have incredible cities and facilities, and those do extend past transportation. We generally focus on transportation. However, Oregon had recently been named the top mountain biking state in the nation, as you've heard about the racing community. It really goes across the gamut. And what I attach in the back of my testimony is some information from the Outdoor Industry Foundation that really does go into a little bit more. We're trying to do additional research on this. They found that bicycling creates an economic growth of $133 billion annually. And for this, what they're calling the Pacific region, and it includes California, but it contributes over $15 billion to the regional economy and over 135,000 jobs. Most of those are in tourism jobs. Those are the jobs that people come to Oregon to visit for mountain bicycling or to ride their bike on the Bear Creek Greenway or along the Willamette Trails in Eugene or Portland. This is an activity that really is something that we can take advantage of. And this specific activity of velodrome track racing is another place where Oregon can excel. So I just wanted to come up here and put our support into it. I will do whatever I can within this building to help you all put this forward, and hope that we can see this move through this committee and get funding for this year. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Very good. Committee?
A couple of comments, Mr. Chair. We have a huge, we have held back from this
committee to do the shut down the building day, where we have, you know, 1,000 cyclists, bikes everywhere, telling the story. But by design, because we know that what we'd really like to do is move this down to Ways and Means and start chipping away and then really go all out. But meeting with us before this meeting is the Oregon Sports Authority, Chambers of Commerce, Tourism, Lodging, and several other business entities that are very important. But Scott touched on one thing that you all need to know about. The top custom bicycle builders, and I don't mean like two or three of them, but the top ones in the whole country are from Oregon. The most teams from Oregon. The most kids involvement are from Oregon. So we're not inventing something. We've already got it here. All we need, I think Steve said it best, is a nudge. We'll raise the rest of money. We'll manage the tracks. This will not cost the state. We have money in the parks 66 ready, and this will have a huge economic boom for us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony very much. Peggy Lynch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Lynch. I'm representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government. And before the committee starts throwing spokes, the League members are bikers, too. And our testimony related to this bill relates to the source of the funding, not to any connecting to the projects themselves. That's not an issue for the League. The League has studied the state park system, developed positions for advocacy, and actively supported the passage of Measure 66, which was to provide money to maintain current parks and to acquire new land for parks. The State Parks Commission has adopted a plan for meeting these goals. Yet we know that without careful investment of Measure 66 dollars, these goals will not be met. Diverting funds to a special project not in the plan, such as that contained in 926, will continue to erode the opportunity to meet the current goals. The League has advocated this session on behalf of assuring that our current state parks are well maintained and managed, and that a very real emphasis is placed on meeting their key performance measure of at least 35 park acres for every 1,000 Oregonians. At the present time, that measure is only 27.5 park acres per 1,000, and it has gone down over the years as we have not invested in buying new parks, and we have had a growing population. Diversion of staffing or resources or additional burden on the management could jeopardize this KPM. 926 directs state parks to spend up to $3.5 million on the construction of the velodromes, and it also says that the Parks and Recs Department shall develop and execute the plan to construct. So it's more than just making them happen. It's also the management or the working together to make this happen, which is a drain on staffing. Last session's action, over $4 million of Measure 66 funds are being used to pay off bonds for the state fair. This session, Parks has budgeted over $200,000 to improve and expand bicycle recreation in Oregon. They are not neglecting the bicycle community. They have also asked for additional monies for recreation grants to local entities. Bicycle recreation is being addressed, but the need to assure that we have park lands for future generations must take precedence this session. We cannot afford to see more acquisition dollars siphoned off for other projects. So we ask that you not support this or find another funding source for this project or these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch. Committee, any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 926, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 926. Senator Prozanski, if you could, the Dash 1 amendments for us.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Dash 1 amendments basically would allow for the creation of possibly a third velodrome, which would be in the area of Eugene, as it states in the lines 14 through 15, 16,
it basically would require, as one of the obligations for the State Parks and Recreation Department, is to consult with the Lane County Parks Division, as well as the City of Eugene and the Southern Willamette Valley Cycling Community, regarding creating a velodrome in that area. It's one of, as Senator Atkinson has stated, this is a sport that has really has mushroomed beyond what I think most people realize as to how important it is as an economic venture for communities. I'll use the southern part of Willamette Valley. Cottage Grove has actually now has a path that runs from downtown out to one of the reservoirs that has been just a mecca and a magnet for families to come and actually enjoy the ability to bike and to participate as family events. And then there are a lot of different of economic-based type of activities that have grown out of not only that small of a community, but larger communities in Southern Oregon as well. My perspective on this is that this is would be good for having three at this point, which would be in the west of the west of I-5 corridor area, in the Willamette as well as in the Rogue Valley area, that would in fact foster this activity and an opportunity for economic development. It's surprising when you start looking at the type of money that is involved in these sports, and the equipment, the people that actually come to these destinations to participate, and how much they put into the communities. I will take some issue as to me that in the 66 money. I mean, clearly that's something that Ways and Means will look at, but I guess from my perspective, this is a means that I think that the State Parks and Recreation Department should be looking at. To me, it's not just getting rural land as much as looking at where can we have opportunities for families to recreate. And this is one that's in a more of urban type of setting that allows individuals to participate, and that they that all the parks, of course, do not need to be in more rural portions of the state. It's worth noting that Shampooey Park, which is a state park, which is just outside of Portland, is a destination place for many of the races that you hear about that occur in the cycling world of Oregon. And I think going back to what Steve Brown has said as to what we saw happen for California, of having an event down there that went on for a week, a number of the people I cycle with actually went down and spent a good portion of the week down there. And it is an opportunity to be a postcard and an opportunity to show off our state and actually get people that have the desire to see greener pastures and use of their means to recreate, to actually be ambassadors for us when they go back to wherever they live and say, man, Oregon is the place you should go. So with that, I am introducing and move that we include the dash ones in Senate Bill 926 at this time, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski moves dash one amendment, Senate Bill 926. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, are there any objections? And seeing none, the motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Senator Atkinson, would you like to move the bill to Ways and Means?
Absolutely. Be delighted to move Senate Bill 926 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. Moves 926 with a due pass to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, are there any objections? And seeing none, so ordered. Committee, we have one more bill before us, which I anticipate will not take that long, but I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 149 and call Rich Angstrom and Gary Lynch. And Sue, while they're coming up, would you just remind us? We've had this before us before.
Yes, Senate Bill 149 was first heard on January 25th. The measure modifies statutes related to mine reclamation, revises definition, establishes when the State Department of Geology and Mining Industry may revoke, terminate, or refuse to renew a permit. specifies when the department may modify an operating permit or reclamation plan, creates a crime of knowingly or recklessly causing substantial harm to human health or the environment. It sets a punishment of a maximum of 1 year's imprisonment, $6,250 fine, or both. We've received a fiscal impact. There's no expenditure impact. There is an amendment, a dash one, that allows surveying and marking requirements to be established by rule and modifies the on-site construction exemption. It changes the penalty for knowingly or recklessly causing harm from a Class A misdemeanor to a violation subject to a fine of not more than $10,000.
Thank you, Sue. Since this has been before us before, don't feel the need to go over everything we went over last time, but feel free, whichever one of you wants to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and actually I appreciate the little bit of time. We were up first, and as I got here, I realized my car battery is dead, and as I was walking back from plugging the new meter that I ran out of quarters on, all the testimony blew all over the streets of Salem. I think I salvaged most of it. So anyways, I think that helped calm me down a little. Mr. Chairman, the first thing I'd like to do is thank the stakeholders who we worked with, including the Farm Bureau, the League of Women Voters, OCAPA, and many of its members, the Oregon Department of Transportation, and some of the members of the committee. The main purpose of this bill was clearly to strengthen our enforcement tools when somebody, frankly, thumbs their nose at the department and continues to operate and sell rock into the market when many others who are following the rules are in that same market. And so there was a lot of support for that bill. Specifically, the Farm Bureau had concerns regarding the farming exemption, and we've added language to address that. Also, the League of Women Voters had a concern about, and rightfully so, about when a pit for which the permit has been revoked. We had an open-ended time frame on which to reclaim that. Currently, we have no time frame. We have to begin immediately. This caps it at 1 year. That does make a certain amount of sense. We don't want to automatically close them if we know somebody else wants to come in. It didn't make environmental or economic sense. So we believe that one was fixed. We also worked with OCAPA regarding their criminal penalty section, and I think we've got that so most people that they can support it. And finally, ODOT was concerned that perhaps this bill somehow prevented them from using material within the right-of-way of a highway construction project. And I said I'd go and speak to the committee that this bill in no way changes that. If material removed from a right-of-way can be used in the right-of-way, and this bill does not change that. In the interest of time, I can go into some more specifics, but with that, I think it's fair to say that we have addressed the concerns of the stakeholders, and hopefully we have a better bill.
Very good. Mr. Angstrom?
Good afternoon. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. We did not testify the first round. We were not in support of the bill in its current form at that time, and we knew there was a lot of work left to do, so we decided just to be quiet and not create a lot more issues. We have worked pretty close with the department and the other stakeholders hearing their concerns, and it's been fully vetted in the industry. We've talked to a few of the senators here, alleviating their concerns, I think, and the industry's in support of the bill at this time.
Very good. Committee, any questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. Dealing with Section 4 of the printed bill, I know it's a 4A amendment, this is the Section 4 is talking about the department's ability to modify an operating permit without consent. And it's a couple questions. One, you use the term because of change conditions, and also then by substantial evidence. Could you give us an idea what those change conditions would be and then what level of proof substantial evidence would be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the first concern there is, and for any pit that was permitted after 1999, these provisions already apply.
the situation is on our older permits, and some of them go back to 72, and frankly, the world was far less sophisticated when it came to permitting then. Based on new information, and only new information, that comes to the department, it gives us the ability to change permit conditions. Currently, we can't do that. The problem with, particularly when you see floodplain mining, the best laid plans of mice and men can sometimes go awry, and this gives us the ability to say, based on new information, and only for certain circumstances, potential pit capture, instability, and instability in mine site has led to some very serious consequences. We want the ability to more than just wave our hand and say, hey, it'd be a good idea if you address this issue. This gives us the ability to deal with that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, this provision actually went in to effect, and it actually is getting moved from another section in 1999, and it actually was an industry bill at that time. And what we were trying to get to was a situation where when there was a risk to human life or under the ESA, we had the feds coming after us and threatening to shut down a site, that the department could go in and make the necessary changes to protect human life or to alleviate the concerns over fish and wildlife. We added, though, a protection when they do that. If the operator disputes it, the last section of this section four, that they can go through dispute resolution. So even though it can be unilateral on the part of the department, if it's objected to by the operator, we have basically an appeals form to follow. And we thought it was a good change to try to be a little more proactive in some of the activities that happen on our sites.
Thank you. I guess that would your comments would lead me to my second question, which dealing with Section 4, is does that preclude a court also? And is this dispute resolution the only remedy? Or if the operator is not satisfied with that, can they again go through the court process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, any applicant can appeal any condition, including to a contested case hearing, anytime. So we can issue. This would allow us to say you got to change these conditions. They would have the right to appeal them through the contested case hearing process.
Thank you.
Committee, anything further?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Pozanski.
I apologize to our individuals testifying. I heard part of the testimony and didn't hear it all. I was going through the file and I saw that the Farm Bureau, when it originally came forward, had some objections, and I thought I heard that there's been some work with the Farm Bureau. They had some suggested changes at that time, and I don't see them in the amendment. So are they comfortable with the amendments that are before us or where the bill is today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pozanski, I worked with both Bruce Chapin and Don Schellenberg from the Farm Bureau. And online, if you look to the amendments, and of course now I won't be able to find them, here they are, to address their concerns specifically, if we look at page 2, lines 11 and 12, they were satisfied with that issue. The other issue was protection of groundwater, and they had some suggestions for that. I think we have a very good record of protecting groundwater around mine sites, and it's my understanding that they were satisfied. When I went to Water Resources, they're aware of it, and we felt that it was adequate currently. The trigger that they would have proposed would have been a huge workload to a section of what we do that I think we handle very well. And I believe, and I don't want to speak for them. Well, I do. I mean, I think we have agreement on that.
Okay.
You might get a nod of the head back there, I hope.
Looking for one. Okay. We got a thumbs up.
We count that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Anything else, committee? And with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 149. I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 149. And Senator Pozanski, if I could have a motion on the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones into Senate Bill 149.
Senator Pozanski moves the dash ones to the bill. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries.
And, yes.
Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 149 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator, for moving the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Committee, any discussions? And seeing none, any objections? And seeing none, motion carries. Senator Beyer, would you like to carry this one?
Those are good.
All right. And with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 149, and we are adjourned.
Hey, Monday.
Thanks, Alan.